Thank you for listening to Crimatorium, the place where crime resides. Crimatorium can also be found on YouTube.
Just into our newsroom this morning, Columbus police have arrested a man in connection with the murder of a woman on Allegheny Avenue. Good morning and thank you for joining us for NBC4 Midday. I'm Ellie Merritt. Police tell us the arrest happened last night in the Linden area. NBC4's Olivia Fento joins us live with a closer look at this case now. Olivia?
Ellie, the man arrested for Rachel Anderson's murder appeared before a judge this morning in Franklin County Municipal Court after SWAT officers arrested him yesterday in Linden. The 53-year-old man is charged with murder in the death of 24-year-old Rachel Anderson. Anderson was a mortuary apprentice working to become a funeral home director at Shaw Davis Funeral Homes. But just one day after her 24th birthday, Anderson didn't show up to work and didn't call anyone to say why. A coworker went to her home, then police came out, and that is where they found the young woman dead inside her East Side apartment. Her colleagues at the funeral home say she was about to be promoted to funeral director, and they're shocked this happened.
Today, we will be taking a look at the case of Rachel Anderson. Rachel was born in Warren, Ohio on January 28, 1984. Warren, Ohio sits alongside the Mahoning River, which extends for approximately 113 miles. It is also the headquarters of Top Shelf Coffee, a family-owned and operated coffee roaster that serves local factories, restaurants, and coffee shops, mostly in Ohio. Rachel was a 2012 graduate of Warren G. Harding High School, where she played in the band, played soccer and volleyball. She was also in the National Honor Society. Rachel earned her Bachelor of Mortuary Science degree in 2016 at the Cincinnati College of Mortuary Science and was on track to become the funeral director at the Shaw Davis Funeral Home in Columbus, Ohio. On Saturday, January 27, 2018, Rachel, along with her younger brother John and some of her friends, were celebrating her 24th birthday. The following night, Rachel Nicoletta Anderson was robbed of her money, her car, and her life in the most brutal and barbaric way imaginable. Anthony Pardon was a 53-year-old registered sex offender with an extensive criminal history beginning in his early teens. In 1979, 14-year-old Anthony Pardon was made a ward of the court and temporarily committed to the Franklin County Children's Services and eventually placed in foster care after sexually assaulting an 8-year-old girl. In 1980, Pardon was charged with the sexual assault of a 9-month-old, the daughter of his foster parents. The reason he gave to police for the assault was that he was upset with his girlfriend. He was tried as a juvenile in that crime. In 1981, he pulled a knife on his girlfriend's mother, sexually assaulted her, and stole $300 from her purse. She was bound and gagged and driven to a creek. Thankfully, a passerby intervened and she survived. He was tried as an adult in that case and was sentenced to 25 years in prison. And was released in 2006 after serving just over 24 years. He was sent to prison again in 2008 for failing to register as a sex offender and forgery and spent 9 more years in prison. Pardon was released in 2017. The trial for Anthony Pardon began on February 4th, 2020. He pleaded not guilty. In the interest of time, most of what you will see and hear will be from the prosecution. The defense's opening statement was short and consisted mostly of instructing the jurors not to make up their minds before they hear all of the evidence. Pardon's mother, sister, a previous elementary school teacher of his, and a psychologist, testified on his behalf.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the state in this case will prove to you, and will prove it beyond a reasonable doubt or burden of proof, that back on January 28th of 2018, that the defendant raped, kidnapped, and murdered Rachel Anderson. January 28th was her birthday. She was 24 years old on the day she was murdered by this man. She moved here to Columbus because she's from Warren, Ohio. She moved here to Columbus as an intern at the Shaw Davis Funeral Home. She had gone to school in Cincinnati to get a mortuary education to work in a funeral home. And part of that process requires employment with a funeral home once you graduate from a college. And so she came here with a friend of hers, another student from that school in Cincinnati, Mr. Sean Griggs, and they jointly rented an apartment out at 3044 Allegheny, out in the east side here of Columbus, kind of in a pocket between Columbus and Whitehall. And both signed a lease, both were on the lease, and that will be important as we go through the testimony. He eventually moved out and she lived there by herself as she was continuing to work there at the Shaw Davis Funeral Home. As I mentioned, she was from Warren, Ohio, and as her birthday, her 24th birthday, was approaching, plans were made to have a birthday party. Her brother, John, came in town for the birthday party, got here on Friday, the 26th of January. Rachel had some friends here in Columbus, only friends in Columbus, that her best friend in high school, Haley Kennedy's brother, John Kennedy, and his wife lived here in Columbus. And so when Rachel moved here, that was the only person besides people she later met at the Shaw Davis Funeral Home that she knew. And so they immediately got together. They had known each other for years. They had all gone to Warren G. Harding High School up in Warren. And so they were friends. And so they made plans to meet on a Saturday night, which was the 27th, and have a birthday party for Rachel. Rachel worked that Saturday. And because her brother was here from out of town, apartment that she lived in worked by key. You had to have the key to lock it, whether you were coming or going. And so she gave her brother John that key while she went to work on Saturday, the idea that he perhaps come and go, and he did. And so they went out that night. They met originally over at John and Tina Kennedy's apartment out by the casino on the west side here in Columbus. And as any birthday party may involve, they played music, they drank, and they smoked some weed, which was at the residence out on the west side. Some of them later went out to some other locations, clubs, and later returned to the residence out on the west side. They actually, John and the victim, Rachel, stayed out there that night and then went home out to 3044 Allegheny on Sunday morning. And John, her brother, made plans to go back to Warren. He left around 1 o'clock in the afternoon, forgot to give her key back. So John is on his way back to Warren and let his sister know that, gee, the only key that Rachel had was with John on his way back to Warren. Luckily, Rachel had an extra key that Sean Griggs had when he lived there with her, which she had given to Tina and John Kennedy. And so she texted them about 1 in the afternoon, says, "Brother John left with the key. Can I come out and pick up the extra key you have?" And they texted back that one of the people who was here for the birthday party went to OU down in Athens, Ohio, and that John and Tina were going to give him a ride back to Athens. And so they texted her back and said, "We're taking this fella who was here for the birthday party back to Athens. We won't be back here in Columbus till about 5:15. And so Rachel went about the rest of her day and then talked to her mother. Her mother, Trish, who lives in the Warren area, around 6:30 p.m. And shortly after that, texted the Kennedys and said, I'll be on my way soon to come out and pick up the key. And we know that Rachel talked to her mother about 6:30. And we know then that around 9:50 or so, Haley, the sister of John and Tina Kennedy, texted her a happy birthday message and tried to call her and didn't get an answer. We know from technology, and technology is a wonderful thing. Forensic evidence, technological advances. The police, the next day, as they commenced their investigation, because Rachel Anderson was never seen or heard from again alive. Her friends, her family, tried to contact her with no result. The next morning, she was due at the Shaw Davis funeral home. She worked at the crematorium up in the Short North, around Buttles and High in that area. And her co-workers thought, gee, she's a very dependable, likable employee, and she's not here at work on Monday morning. I wonder what happened that she is not here. And so the manager sent out Trent Snyder, who was out doing some deliveries for the funeral home, said, hey, you've been to Rachel's apartment before. Why don't you stop by there and see if she overslept, find out where she was, because they knew it was her birthday, and they thought maybe she did party too much and had slept in and didn't make it to work. So Trent Snyder, who will testify this morning, will tell you, he went out, he knocked on the door, he'd been there before, he knew where she lived, and there was no answer. He went over to see the apartment manager, Lisa Richardson, for Cardinal Creek Crossing Apartments. That is a large unit cluster of apartments out there, and said, will you let me in the apartment to see where Rachel Anderson is? And not surprisingly, he said, well, who are you and why am I going to let you in somebody else's apartment? And so he, however, had noticed that in looking through a crease of the window that a candle was burning in the apartment. And that's a hazard if you're a landlord or if you're a tenant that's not home and forgot to blow out the candle. So Miss Richardson agreed to go over and inspect the apartment and see if Rachel was there. She had overslept. And so she went over and did a run through the apartment, came back out and said, I blew out the candle, but I didn't see Rachel. That was reported back. And that just wasn't a good enough answer for the people that knew Rachel. They said that this isn't like Rachel. Her car is there. Her car, however, was not parked where it usually is parked in front of her apartment. It's kind of around the corner in another slot. And Mr. Snyder was familiar with her car because it was a bit unusual. So they said, well, this ain't right. The landlord said, well, I can't let you in, but Mr. Griggs is on the lease with her as a joint tenant. Let's try and call him. And if he consents, then we can have you and or others go in and look a little bit better. So they called the police. The police arrived. Again, the police didn't have a search warrant, didn't have evidence of a crime at that time. Certainly, you will see later, they had evidence of a horrific crime, a rape and a murder of Rachel, where she had been not only raped, but she had been hogtied behind her back by a curling iron, a hairdryer, and her legs pulled up behind her and stuffed in a closet. She's stuffed in a closet, and that presumably is why Miss Richardson didn't see her when she inspected the premises to see if she saw her. So we have Rachel not yet found. The police called, and they agree to have Mr. Kennedy, who a flurry of phone calls with Mr. Griggs, with John Kennedy, who may have seen her somewhere after 6:30 when she had talked to her mother, she left to pick up the key. She went out. Mr. Kennedy would say she came out sometime Sunday evening, picked up the key, went back. Presumably, apartment had been unlocked this whole time while she was driving out to the west side because she couldn't lock it because it was a bolt lock. We know, however, that on the way back, she stopped at an Arby's. She's about 4 miles from her apartment there in Whitehall and bought some Arby's food and an Arby's drink. We know that she made it home because that receipt says she was there at the Arby's about 7:30. So the evidence that we will be able to show, she talked to mom at 6:30, said, I'm leaving shortly to pick up my key. Kennedy say he did. She did pick up the key. She stopped at Arby's around 7:30. And we know that the defendant, we will prove that the defendant's phone was at Rachel's apartment from 7:59 p.m. until about 9:25. So we will hear experts that will say Anthony Pardon's phone was in the area served by that cell tower that evening. But also we have, as technology has advanced, Google has a location service on your phone. It's called geolocation, where if I have a Gmail address, which is run, owned, operated by Google, if I have a Gmail address such as TonyPardon52@gmail.com, Tony Pardon's phone becomes a tracking device. So we can track where Mr. Pardon is when he's carrying his phone. So guess what Google will tell us? That from 7:59 p.m. on Sunday, January 28th, the defendant's phone was at a certain number of meters from the apartment of Rachel Anderson. 7:59 p.m. to about 9:25, we, by scientific evidence, will put that man in her apartment. The precise time during which she is not seen or heard from, and stops answering her phone shortly after he left that apartment and is never seen or heard from again until she is found the next day, bound and gagged, hogtied, raped, and murdered. Our evidence will show, and I think it is an appropriate theme, that Anthony Pardon's phone was in all the wrong places at the wrong time. And guess what? Anthony Pardon's DNA was in all the wrong places. Vaginal swabs were taken at Rachel's autopsy. And that's merely sticking in some evidentiary items into her vagina to swab and remove whatever may be found in there. And guess what? Inside the vagina of Rachel Anderson was that man's DNA. On the vaginal swabs, the sperm fraction had the defendant's DNA, and there was also what they call epithelial DNA, which is skin cells. So skin cells are inside the wrong place for Rachel Anderson, and they belong to the defendant. Not only that, I mentioned she was bound and gagged and hogtied. She was hogtied with the curling iron from her bathroom. She was hogtied behind her back with a hairdryer, and the police also took swabs from that hairdryer and that curling iron. And guess whose DNA is on that cable from the curling iron and the hairdryer? Anthony Pardon's. Once again, Anthony Pardon's DNA is in the wrong place, because this woman, when she was hogtied, and you will see her ankles, and I'll warn you now, in a few minutes, I'm going to show you some of the evidence we will present in our case, which will include the picture of her hogtied as they found her in that closet behind her back. And you will see behind her back and around her ankles that cord around which the DNA of the defendant is found. Nobody else's DNA is in her vagina. Nobody else's DNA besides him can be identified on what was used to bound her. There was a shroud kind of thing put over her head as she's hogtied in the closet, across the top of the door of the closet and around the doorknob of the closet is wrapped these cables so that she can be asphyxiated around the neck by these cords, as the coroner will tell you. Not only that, she is stabbed the base of her skull right back here by what is later recovered, a steak knife. She had a set of steak knives in her kitchen, and one was recovered with blood and hair on it. And you'll see the pictures of those wounds. And once again, using Mr. Pardon's phone, guess what? Her purse is dumped upside down on the floor in her living room. It appears there's a struggle upstairs. There is male DNA found under her fingernails. They do fingernail scrapings and can determine it's male DNA, but there's not a sufficient quantity to test it. The police, as they are called to the scene that morning, John Kennedy goes in, more closely inspects the premises and finds her body in the closet. And the police are called, and thereafter, the crime scene search unit arrives. BCI is called. They process the scene by taking hundreds of photographs that you'll see. They don't know who may have committed this crime. They say, well, what was taken? Well, there was a orange credit card belonging to Rachel that was taken. And at, I want to get this time right, at 9:49 p.m., the defendant's phone is in the apartment from 7:59 to 9:25 at 9:49 p.m. And between 9:49 and 11:09, and those are precise numbers because when you go with a credit card to an ATM machine and try and take out money, that logs it. And so Rachel's credit card is attempted to be used at seven different locations, not far from her apartment, and frankly, not far from where the defendant was living at the time. And some video stills are taken from the attempted use of the credit card. And a man by the name of Anthony Sleets panhandles outside of one of these locations. And Mr. Sleets is identified in one of these surveillance photos within an hour after the defendant left the apartment building. And over a period of several days, that credit card was used or attempted to be used 15 different times at different locations across the city. And the defendant or his sister were using that credit card or attempting to use that credit card. Well, since Mr. Anthony Sleets is identified, he contacted by the police and detained and interviewed and gave a full interview to the police at the time, but has since passed away. So you won't hear him from the witness stand, but an interview with the police was done where a videoed interview will play for you. And he'll say he was panhandling and some fella he didn't know came up and asked him, would you use this credit card to take some money out? Here is the PIN number. And that this man said that he and his girlfriend had a beef and he was afraid she was going to drain the account and he didn't want to use it himself, but I'll give you some money if you use it. So we have Anthony Sleets in some video surveillance at some of these premises using the credit card. So the police said, well, what should we do next? Well, they worked on the case, but they had those vaginal swabs. And they took the vaginal swabs and were able to identify them and said, the semen of someone by the name of Anthony Pardon is in the vagina and on the inner thigh and in the cervical area of Rachel Anderson. And on her right wrist is DNA of a man named Anthony Pardon. Presumably, whoever bound her in this terrible way grabbed her wrist in order to get it behind her back as he did it. So again, the DNA of the defendant is in all the wrong places, around her wrist, in her inner thigh, in her cervical region, in her vagina, and his phone is at these different locations where her stolen credit card is being used. So the police say, let's see if we can find Anthony Pardon and thereafter seek subpoenas and get subpoenas for those credit card records, for the phone records, for the Google geolocation services. And so we have three different things: the cell tower location, putting his cell phone in that region of her apartment, the geolocation services that put her, I think they will testify, within 25 meters of the apartment between 7:59 and 9:25. And the card continues to be used several days later. As I say, one of the locations was a DSW store at Easton and a place known as City Trends. And Deborah Pardon, who will testify, she will say, I took the credit card, I used the credit card, my brother was the source of the credit card, my brother gave me the PIN that I used to make purchases, to try and get money from ATMs. But you'll be able to see in two of those surveillance photos, the sister there at the counter engaging in the transaction, but right behind her, you can see a man who is Anthony Pardon. He's with his sister while she's using the credit card of the murdered Rachel Anderson. He's wearing a black and red New York ball cap in that video surveillance that you can see. And he's wearing a black or dark jacket, has a little circle on the side and something on its breast. And guess what? When he is arrested in the back seat of the car that he had been driving is a black and red New York ball cap that I'm going to show you in just a minute. And the next day, because he had been stopped by a highway patrolman the day before driving a car, he didn't have a driver's license. He decided I needed a driver's license. Went down just a couple blocks down the street to the office of the state representative and went to her office to see if she could facilitate him getting a driver's license. Why he just didn't go to the DMV like you and me do, I'm not sure we have an explanation for it. But walking off the elevator in the 16th floor of the Rife Tower, three blocks just north of this courthouse, we have a video surveillance of him getting off the elevator. And you can see that patch on the coat he's wearing and on the shoulder and on the chest that he was wearing up at the DSW when he was with his sister using Rachel Anderson's credit card.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
And ladies and gentlemen, this case, like many others, is putting together the pieces of a puzzle. And the puzzle is poor Rachel had a birthday party. Her brother took the key. There's no signs of forced entry in Rachel's apartment. And I'm not sure we can say whether or not the defendant went in the apartment while she was picking up the key or whether he knocked on the door and she opened it up and he pushed his way in. But the defendant was in her apartment the night she was murdered. The defendant's DNA is in all the wrong places. And his phone is in all the wrong places. And through that scientific forensic evidence, we're going to be able to show to you that on the night of the murder, the defendant's phone, at least, was in the apartment from about 7:59 to 9:25. That only about 20 minutes later, several blocks away on Main Street, there's video surveillance photos of Mr. Sleets using the card. And guess what? The defendant's phone is also there at that location, confirming what the deceased Mr. Sleets had said, that some fella he didn't know approached him and asked him to do that. And as the judge read to you the indictment, there are multiple counts of murder with one victim that the state's entitled to charge. First, the defendant purposely and with prior calculation and design took a while to murder Rachel Anderson. As she was being bound and gagged, there was a black piece of cloth jammed down her throat. Some of the cords from the Venetian blinds had been used to wrap around her neck and around her back. There was a white belt that was used to bind her. And as I said, coroner will testify the cause of death was asphyxiation around the neck. And she had been so strongly strangled, asphyxiated, that the blood vessels in her eyes were ruptured. And that's a sign of applied pressure around the neck that you'll see from these items that I just described.
For the record, if you would please state your name, spelling your last name.
Jonathan Kennedy, K-E-N-N-E-D-Y.
Thank you. You may inquire.
Good, thank you, Your Honor. Sir, do you or did you know Rachel Anderson?
Yes, I did.
When did you first meet her and her family?
Years ago. It was my sister Haley's friend. We met when we were children.
And you moved from Athens to Columbus, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And at what point did you move actually to Columbus then?
I would say the summertime of 2017, if my memory serves me correct.
Did you learn from your sister that Rachel was residing here at that time?
Yes, sir. Me and my wife had moved out there, and we didn't know anybody, and Haley got a hold of me and said, oh, Rachel lives here. So we got in contact and, you know, met up with Rachel.
Now, what part of town did you and your wife, Tina, live in?
The west side over near Hollywood Casino.
From the summer of 17 until when did you move out from that location?
We moved out right before our lease was up, the following year after the tragedy there. And we moved to Colorado.
And is that where you're currently residing?
Yes, sir.
Colorado?
Yes, sir.
And you came back here pursuant to subpoena by the state, correct?
Yes, sir.
And if we direct your attention to that weekend when the tragedy that you mentioned occurred, was there a special day that weekend that you can explain to the jury?
Yes. So it was Rachel's birthday. We got together with John and planned a birthday party for her.
When you say John, who would that be?
Rachel's brother.
Her brother, John Anderson?
Yes, sir.
Did John live in Columbus or somewhere else?
He lived somewhere else. I don't know where he resided at the time.
But you had contact with him to plan Rachel's birthday get-together?
Yeah, we made her a cake and got a little shindig together to have a good time for her and celebrate her birthday.
Where was that going to be located?
That was going to be at my house.
At the apartment out near the casino?
Yes, sir.
And what day that weekend was it planned for?
I believe, if my memory serves me correct, we had the birthday party that Saturday.
Saturday? And do you remember when her brother John got into town?
I don't exactly recall. I think it was the day before that Friday.
Assume that Friday's the 26th, Saturday's the 27th, Sunday's the 28th. Your recollection is he arrived on Friday.
Yes, sir.
And do you know where he stayed?
I think he stayed at Rachel's house.
The apartment.
Yeah.
Now, you knew where Rachel lives, correct?
Yeah.
Had you previously visited that apartment before January 29th?
Yeah, so me and Tina were very good friends with Rachel, and we would always hang out over at her house or vice versa over at our house.
Go out to dinner and other locations as a group?
Yeah, we would go out to eat and, you know, explore the town or just sit there and make food at the house. Most of the time we would order in over at Rachel's apartment.
And what kind of birthday preparations were made for that birthday celebration Saturday night?
We had a birthday cake that me and all of our friends made and got together for. You know, we got drinks and food, some of her favorites. And, you know, we decorated my house and got it real nice for her.
And who attended this birthday get-together at your apartment that Saturday?
My friend Brian and Justin, me and my wife, John, Rachel, of course, and my buddy Ryan had a girl with him as well.
And your buddy Ryan, is he from Warren as well?
He's from here in Columbus.
He's here in Columbus. Where was he going to school at the time?
Ohio University in Athens, Ohio.
Did he reside there?
Yes, he did. During the time that he was in college there.
On January 28th and 29th, he lived there, correct?
In Athens, yeah. I actually had to drive him back after the party was over the following day on that Sunday.
Do you know how many keys there were to Rachel's apartment on Allegheny?
As far as I know, there were two. One my wife Tina had that Rachel had given to her, and the other one Rachel had with her.
You know, or did you know then someone by the name of Sean Griggs?
Yes, so that was Rachel's ex-boyfriend. He resided at that location with her for a short period of time, and then he abruptly left. I don't know any details.
But in January of 2018, he was not residing there, correct?
No, he was not.
Did you learn on Sunday at any time anything about that key that Tina had, the extra key for Rachel's apartment?
So Rachel didn't have her key. As far as I know, John had the key and had left with it. And Rachel had contacted Tina while we were driving Ryan back to Ohio University. And we got back to our house, and, you know, Tina and Rachel set up a time for Rachel to come get her spare key from us when we got back.
Would there be a series of either calls or texts between Rachel and Tina or yourself on this subject?
Yes.
And what time do you recollect leaving to take Ryan back to Athens?
I don't recall the exact time. My estimate would be early afternoon-ish, probably about 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon is when we left to take Ryan back.
And did you hear from Rachel about John leaving with the key before or after you left for Athens?
I believe that it was after we had left. Tina was contacted by Rachel.
Do you know, did you give an estimate, you and Tina, as to when you would be back in Columbus and Rachel could pick up your key?
The estimated time would be between 5:30 and 6:30, but I don't recall an exact time.
And you did get back to the apartment here in Columbus after taking Ryan back to Athens?
Yeah, we went back to our place, and Rachel had met us shortly after and got the key from Tina.
And did you see Rachel when she came to the apartment on the west side to pick up that key?
Yeah, so Rachel had a key to our house as well, and she let herself in, and we were hanging out down in the basement. I was laying on the couch, and Tina gave her the key. We joked around, and Rachel didn't want to stick around. She was tired and maybe a little hungover and wanted to go home.
How long would she be at your apartment when she picked up the key that afternoon/evening?
I would say she was there for less than 15 minutes.
The next day, did you have any contact regarding Rachel not reporting to work on Monday morning?
Yes. So specifically what happened was I was at home. I had just taken Tina to work and dropped her off. I didn't really directly talk to Rachel that day whatsoever, obviously. Tina was contacted and got a hold of me with concern that Rachel wasn't picking up and this was out of character for her. So I had gone over to the apartment.
What did you do after that?
Can you re-ask the question?
Yeah, did you have contact with Sean Griggs that morning or afternoon on January 29th?
So that morning was a little bit hectic. The first person I believe that I spoke to was Kim, who was quite concerned, and I talked to Tina.
Tell us who Kim is.
I believe Kim is like the secretary, or I'm not entirely sure, but she's either the secretary or management of the mortuary, Sean Davis Funeral Home.
Where Rachel was employed.
Yes.
And you had a conversation with her?
Yeah, and she made it perfectly clear that she was very concerned for Rachel's safety and just wanted to know where she was and if she was okay.
Mr. Kennedy, the last question dealt with the discussion that you had with the employer Kim at Shaw Davis. And as a result of that discussion and her concerns, what did you do? Tell the jury what you did.
The result of that discussion was I was trying to check on Rachel and make sure that she was okay. I had looked through the window. I tried to open the...
Did you actually go to the apartment then?
Yeah. I had gone over to the apartment.
And did you seek entry?
I was trying to.
Was the door locked?
The front and the back door were both locked.
Did you look through the window?
I tried to peek through the blinds, but visibility wasn't so good. I proceeded to call her phone over and over. A police officer was already driving by, and I waved him down and tried to see if he could gain access or entry to the property.
Did you talk to the leasing agent or apartment manager at the location?
Not right away. I then had proceeded to call up Sean, because in my mind he should have been on the lease and been able to give me at least access to the property. And I think that Sean had gotten a hold of the leasing agent, and they proceeded to... she had proceeded to come to the property, and the officer was still there on standby. He didn't, I guess, have authority to go gain entry or enter the property there.
Did you understand that Sean Griggs, who was on the lease, then gave permission for friends of Rachel to go in the apartment?
Yes.
And with that permission, did you and she enter the premises?
Yeah, we entered the property.
Tell me what you saw when you in the living room area when you entered.
Well, when I went in, the living room is to the left. It looked like she had a food and drink there. There was a bowl packed on the coffee table, and it looked like she was about to smoke a cigarette there as well.
Did you notice anything? Did you go into the kitchen?
Well, immediately when I hit the front door was opened and I was allowed in, the first thing I saw that was her birthday cake was sitting on her little kitchen table. So as you enter the property, there's a hallway that goes straight through to the kitchen. And the cake was sitting there, not put away. And Rachel's a very organized person that would have put that away the first chance that she got.
After inspecting the lower level of the apartment, what did you do next?
So after I had checked the downstairs and gone through the kitchen into the laundry room, I had turned back around. There was a closet next to the staircase that I checked. And as I started going up the staircase, there was, you know, some pictures knocked to the side, and her Marilyn Monroe picture was gone, which I thought was a little strange.
Where was this Marilyn Monroe picture located in the apartment?
It's in the staircase hanging on the wall.
And it was not there?
It was not even there. And I don't know what made me realize that, but that was gone. I proceeded to go up the staircase, and I didn't even go into her room yet. I went right to the bathroom. And the only reason that I did that is because every morning Rachel gets ready for work. So I went into the bathroom, opened the door, felt the towel to see if it was wet, to see if she had left or something. I went into the spare room.
What did you find with the towel?
It was dry. It was dry. I went into the spare room that we were helping her get together, and nothing seemed out of place. From there, I turned around and walked towards her room, looked around. It was quite out of place, considering how it normally is. And then I noticed that there's a closet door there, which I never had noticed, because it's normally open and flushed with the headboard. And I went to pull the door handle, and it felt like something was pulling it back, and I pulled it, and there was something tied around the door handle, so I pulled it out, and here came Rachel. She was tied up in the closet.
And what did you do next, John?
I lost my shit. I screamed and pleaded that she was okay. I tried to see if I could help her. I was screaming for her. But any direction that I pulled her, it just seemed like I was choking her. So I started screaming and I ran out.
Ran downstairs, and did you advise the police officer was downstairs what you had found?
Yeah, I completely lost my mind. I was trying to get him to go back in there.
There were your cords around the doorknob?
Yeah.
That is on the outer part of that closet. Did you notice whether or not there were cords over the top?
I wasn't fully aware if it was on the outside of the door, but when I grabbed the handle and pulled it, it was clearly wrapped around the inside of the door. That's a for sure. That's a for sure yes.
I'm going to, Mr. Kennedy, put up a few photos of some of the things you have testified about and ask you to identify them for us. There is an item that's previously been identified as State's Exhibit A1. Can you tell us what is shown in that photo?
In that photo is a lamp and a chair that were already sitting outside of the property when I arrived.
Now, is this the address we're talking about where Rachel lived, 3044 Allegheny Avenue?
Yes.
In the apartment complex?
Yes.
Here's a photo also previously identified, State's Exhibit A6. Can you tell us what that appears to be?
That's her yoga mat with her coffee table we would sit around.
That her couch in the living room that we talked about?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, it is.
And there is, looks like a...
The beanbag chair and pillow on the floor is normal because she liked to sit right there. Because if she was on the couch, she would lay down.
Here is another angle of an item previously marked for purposes of identification as State's Exhibit A5. Is that a different angle in the same living room?
Yes.
And does there appear on the table to be a cup of some kind of liquid with a straw coming out of it?
It definitely looks like an Arby's cup.
Here in the witness, this is an exhibit not previously marked and identified, but will be later in this case, State's Exhibit A165. You mentioned a birthday cake. Is that the birthday cake you saw?
That's it right there. We wrote that out and made that for her.
And is that the cake that you and your friends made for the party the day before?
Yes, sir.
And did she take that home with her after the party?
Yes, sir.
And the closet door in Rachel's bedroom, is that appear as you saw it that day on January 29th?
That's only a slight representation of what I saw that day, yes.
If you see coming from the door handle of that closet, it appears to be a white item going down towards the floor. Did you notice that when you were there?
Yes, whenever I grabbed the outside of the door handle and I pulled the first time, I noticed that there, and I pulled by the door and the cable because it was so tense on the inside.
From your observations, did it appear Rachel was deceased at this time?
At first, I wasn't fully aware, and I tried to help her, but after that time, I realized that she was dead.
Here is a closer photograph, State's Exhibit A99, that will be identified by some others later. Is that appear to be how Rachel was found by you in the closet that morning, January 29th?
Yes.
Did you that morning, Mr. Kennedy, then remain at the premises and give a statement to the police?
Yes, sir, I did.
As we saw in State's State's Exhibit A1 put crime scene tape around the entrance and secure the premises?
I don't know. I was in a police vehicle in what they call a paddy wagon, I guess.
And is that where you gave your statement to detectives when they arrived at the scene?
Yeah, I was. Yes, sir.
Going back to the night before, do you have a time frame when you think Rachel may have picked up the key?
I'm not absolutely certain of the time that it was.
There were some texts back and forth that may be able to identify or narrow the time frame. Would that be correct?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Kennedy, based on your contact with Rachel, were you familiar with her car?
Yes.
And when you arrived there, did you find her car parked in front of her house or somewhere else?
It was on the side of the property, which is completely out of the ordinary.
From your past experience, would she typically park in front of the house or in the location you found it that
day? She parked right in front of that house. She did not trust that place. So she wanted to be as close to the door as possible.
Now, on the night of her birthday party out at your apartment, you mentioned buying provisions for the party. Most of the people there were in their early, mid-20s. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. That's correct.
And was marijuana or weed present at the party? And did most of the people there smoke marijuana that
night? Yes, sir.
And within Rachel's apartment, did she keep a small jar of marijuana, to your knowledge?
Yes, sir, definitely.
And were you familiar with where she kept that?
Yes, sir.
And did you see that there on the 29th when you were there and found her body?
No, I did not.
That was missing?
Yes, sir, it was. It was missing from the location that it's always at.
The room upstairs that you described, did it appear that it was how you may have observed it in the past, or did it appear in any kind of disarray?
It appeared to be in disarray.
And Rachel was 24 years old on that Saturday that you had the birthday party for, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I have no other questions, John.
Okay, are there any matters that we need to get on the record?
Yes, sir.
Not from the state, Your Honor.
Okay.
Judge, I think Mr. Parham wants to put something on the record.
Okay. Have you consulted with your attorneys?
No.
Okay, I just want to just make sure anything that you say, particularly if it relates to any facts in the case, potentially could be used against you. So you just need to be careful, sir. But yes, sir.
A while back ago, I tried to get rid of my attorneys. Under the advising of the courts and other people, I went on and went through with this. But I'm telling you now, I am not happy with what's been going on. I'm not. I just want that on the record. I want that on the record that I am not happy with what's been going on here. I'm not. I might as well be sitting over there with him. Okay. I might as well be sitting right over there with him. I'm not happy with this here at all. I don't feel that I'm getting represented in no kind of 100% way at all. I want that on the record.
Okay. It's on the record, and yes, we did have the discussion previously, even though my recollection was that it was more so towards Ms. Dixon than Mr. Thomas. But we have it on the record that you're not happy with what's happening right now. We're not at a point at all where I can make that consideration whatsoever. Court of Appeals, if there is a conviction, obviously, we'll take a look at everything that the attorneys have done and decide if they have represented you appropriately in this matter. Okay.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.